If you have an old kettle that takes ages to boil, it may cost you £20 to replace it. But if you get a new one, you'll save £10 a year every year on your £10 a year every year on your electricity bill.
Hello and welcome to The Trawl, the show where we scroll through Twitter so you don't have to. I'm Marina Perkis.
And I'm Gemma Forte, and this week's Trawl is brimming with corruption, politicians getting an earful, cost of living panic, Tory incompetence and Twitter takedowns. But first, Marina, you basically met the potential next Prime Minister this week. What the hell?
I mean, yes. I did. So Keir Starmer was actually going to be on, well, he was on, Jeremy Vine's show on Channel 5 on the same day I was. So I was absolutely chomping at the bit, like I'm going to be sat on the same piece of table as him. And I was supposed to be, you know, Carol Malone was going to be there batting for the right. And we would get to quiz him on stuff. And I'd even asked, you know, I'd even asked my Twitter following. And they came up with some great stuff, you know, what I should be asking him. What, you know, do we need to hear from him to make people vote for him? Because a lot of people obviously don't feel like they can. And then about 10 minutes, no, longer than that, I don't know, half an hour before going on air, we were told that actually he was just going to go on his own with Jeremy Vine and take calls from, well, the callers. Very disappointing.
Yeah, so really disappointing for you, but I guess not a total cop-out from him. Because he didn't know.
I mean, he's not doing a truss.
Exactly. In the same week where she's avoided her Nick Robinson interview, hasn't she?
Exactly. She she's fine for GB News. She can do GB News and she can do all the hustings, but she can't do BBC.
But from a kind of just interesting standpoint, you know, I mean, I know we both sort of, we get to meet quite a few people, but it's a big deal and it should feel like a big deal. He's a big name politician and you're sat there. So what I want to know is, did you hang out in the green room stealing pens, eating crisps, or was it like he's got his security detail there, he's in, he's out, shake it all about, barely got to say hello?
No, he was there just as another panelist would be there, you know, walking up and down the corridor. That's where I saw him. And I'll be honest, I was a bit starstruck. I mean, it was a bit, I don't usually get starstruck, but Jeremy was a bit shorter than I expected.
Oh, was he friendly?
Yeah, he was. He came over to me and, you know, shook his hand, and I was a bit like, blah, 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 blah. And I said, such a shame I don't get to ask you any questions. He's like, oh, maybe another time. I was like, you're just fobbing me off. But no, it was good. It was good. Anyway, that's didn't get that much more exciting than that. But Gemma, did you have an exciting week? Anything to report?
Don't know. It's all a bit of a blur, really. Yeah, I've done a bit of BBC Papers, bit of Sky News and stuff. Funny enough, I was having dinner tonight with the kids, and they're 17 and 15, so, you know, conversation ranged. I think we covered, are raisins pointless? I think we all think they are, actually. We also talked about, is it okay to think that Superbad on a certain day is as good as The Godfather? That was a debate. And then my daughter goes, so Mum, she said, I was on the train home from work the other day. She's doing a bit of waitressing and babysitting and stuff. And because, you know, I've got to get them out to work because my bills are going up. No, but anyway, that's not the point. She said, I gave your podcast a listen. She went, this whole thing about the button, the nuclear button, and that woman who said, I'm ready. And so she looked quite sort of horrified. So there's a little bit of chat about nuclear annihilation as well, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
But I put her mind at rest. I said, don't worry, it'll be fine.
Quite the eclectic dinner party chat, that.
And I did say, I said, don't worry, because we're in London. So if it does happen, you'll never know. What you don't want to be is the outskirts. You don't want to be in Peterborough, sort of, because it's you're half in, half out from the nuclear mushroom. And then that's rubbish. Do you think that was good parenting?
Don't go to Peterborough. That's the takeaway piece of advice.
I mean, like, sorry if you're listening in Peterborough, but like, you've got loads of friends.
Loads of friends in Peterborough.
I used to work there at one point, and it is like, yeah, you're half in, half out from annihilation. Anyway, the other thing, I want to ask you a question before we get into the Trawl. What you've got, obviously, a huge Twitter following. I have a medium-sized, much smaller Twitter following, but still get traction, right? What's your blocking tactics? Because I got a few, there was a few sort of back Boris ones the other day. I was getting quite, I'm being sort of shouted at, and it gets a bit tiresome. So are you quite trigger happy with the block button out of interest?
No, I'm actually not.
Yeah.
Even when people are grade A douches, really? I don't tend to block them. I think I block, I've probably blocked about 20 or 30 people.
Is that it?
Yeah.
I've blocked hundreds.
I don't really. No. And, but there were, I've got to tell you this run-in I had, which was bloody hilarious. Mm. I have to share it. So this guy, his name is Hugh something or other. I can't remember his surname, but I'm not going to name and shame him anyway.
Hugh Janus.
I basically put out. That was him. Hugh Janus.
Yeah.
And he basically, I tweeted something anti-Tory. Obs, and he quote tweeted me, and he basically tried to shame me for being a private school daughter of a baronet.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
Now three things are quite hilarious about this. One, well, I'm not. I went to comprehensive schools, have done all my life. Two, definitely not the daughter of a baronet. My mum and dad, dad was a waiter and a hospital night porter and a gardener, and my mum was a dinner lady and a cleaner. So quite far removed from a baronet.
Yeah.
A third thing that's rather hilarious, he's making a dig at private schools, right? In his bio, it says, taught history in private schools.
Right, yeah.
Right.
But also, so I have a bit of a problem with it, because even if you went to private school, it's not your fault, right. You know, if you had... It's just school.
No, it's not. It's not a thing.
Yeah.
No, exactly. And I don't normally bite. I don't normally block. I don't normally bite. But it looked like he had me confused with Marina Hyde, who is the sensational Guardian journalist. Yeah. So I went back to him and I just said, that's not me. You'll be confusing me with Marina Hyde. I'm flattered, but that's, yeah, no. And then he comes back and says, well, he detests me anyway because I'm a Marxist who writes for The Guardian. So he's still thinking I'm Marina Hyde,
right,
who writes for The Guardian. And I tell him this. Wait for it. He blames me for not putting in my bio that I'm not Marina Hyde.
So it's all your fault. It's all your fault. It's like in my bio, it doesn't explain that I'm not Dean Gaffney. I'm not Dean Gaffney. I'm not Jane McDonald. I'm not Lorraine Kelly. So, yeah, it's your fault. 100%.
It's very misleading, Gemma. I actually went back to my final tweet and I just said, are you honestly saying I'm in the wrong? Because my bio doesn't say I'm not Marina Hyde. My bio, by the way, I mean, my name is Marina Perkis. It's quite clear on my Twitter. I said to him, you've not said in your bio that you're not Hugh Grant. Would it be your error if I assumed you were? And I don't work for The Guardian. It takes seconds to figure this out. And then he blocks me. And to think, folks, all the joy of Twitter is for free.
Wow. I think sometimes blocking's fun. But, you know, not if they're amusing like that, but when they get a bit like argy-bargy, I'm like, oh, shut up. Do you know what? So, you know, last week we were talking about patriotism and I was talking about, you know, Union Jack ties and all that stuff. I was really interested because I spotted a tweet from @NoContextBrits. Now, this is actually a humorous account. It's just mainly jokes. They call themselves a celebration of Britain contains irony, sarcasm and context. So irony and sarcasm, I'm there for that. That's the kind of thing that makes me feel patriotic. And they posted a big picture of the Union Jack with the question, name a place better than the UK, I will wait. So I thought, well, let's see, you know, what people's feelings are about the UK and how patriotic we are. This was the response that had the most likes. Listen.
United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama, Haiti, Jamaica, Peru, Republic, Dominican, Cuba, Caribbean, Greenland, El Salvador too, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Venezuela, Honduras, Guyana, and still Guatemala, Bolivia, then Argentina, and Ecuador, Chile, Brazil, Costa Rica,
Dominica. That's so Marina. It goes on for 1:30. It's every country in the world.
So I've got to be honest with you, right? So you sent that to me. I hadn't seen it. And then I got up at 5 o'clock this morning because I had to make a head start and stuff. And that's the first thing I watched, and it had me pissing myself at 5 a.m. in the morning. I just thought it was brilliant. It's got this little mouse tapping it.
So there you go.
There were some other great replies under that I did notice. A parody Liz Truss account, which is a great follow, by the way, @Liz_MP, said, any one of the countries in Europe with less turd on the beaches, which is all of them, actually. Another reply from Lady Jules Carter, as was Jules, posted an article from cntraveler.com, which cites the happiest countries in the world where the Nordic ones come out on top. And she wrote, the happiest places have taxation, governments, and an approach that is diametrically opposed to Tory as possible. And then Victoria at Vicky all over said, the UK, but 12 years ago.
Oh, it's just absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, this made me feel really patriotic. Someone called the Pegasus at Pagan Johnston said, literally anywhere, just got back from Croatia, supposedly a poorer country compared to the UK. It looks head and shoulders above us. Didn't see any homeless people, plenty of facilities for kids. At this point, I thought, they're on the wrong thing. They're on Twitter, but it's like TripAdvisor. Crystal clear waters, a distinct lack of bins. And Alan Colley just finally said, countries better than the UK seem to be measured by the price of a pint of lager. All right, Bill, good holiday. Brilliant, Bob, only £3 a pint. Can't beat that, mate. Nice one. Great replies. It was just fantastic replies to that particular tweet.
On the subject, by the way, of happiest places in the world, did you see our latest Brexit win, Jenna?
Oh, which one? There's so many. No, I didn't.
Oh, this is a good one. So on Tuesday, Sky News posted an article with the headline, Eurostar to axe direct trains between London and Disneyland Paris due to Brexit.
Wow.
And then the article goes on to explain it really explicitly. So it actually said due to Brexit in the headline, which is like, fair play. And it goes on to explicitly explain that it's due to the UK's withdrawal from the EU, which has taken away the seamless and frictionless travel that Brits previously enjoyed.
Great. Wonderful. Well, that's just basically a real shame, and it's more misery and less happiness for British children. So wonderful. Oh my God, by the way, sorry, absolutely hilarious. Have you heard about the Brexit Festival, which they actually had to rename because, I mean, it's just so disturbing. This flipping festival, Marina, cost £120 million, which is just gross given what we're facing at the moment. So they had to, in the end, call it an arts festival. And this is what I don't get, right? The organisers of it were estimating 66 million visitors. How? I mean, that would be nearly the whole population. And given that, like, you know, nearly half of people didn't want it, how did they ever figure? Anyway, the Daily Mail.
Well, it was livid. Patrick Minford doing the forecast.
Yeah, exactly. So the Daily Mail were furious, basically, and they've managed to, like, blame it on Remainers and just say, you know, furious. It's like a Remainer flop and all of this stuff. Just mental. And I was thinking also, what was there? Did they have, like, slides into sewage? Did they have, like, Right Said Fred doing a little bit of, you know, jamboree? Perhaps photo walks with Nigel Farage. It just all sounds absolutely rubbish. And I wouldn't have gone if you paid me.
God, do you ever think, what must we look like to the rest of the world? Like, I did actually tweet about this. Like she said, from energy bills to train fares to property to education to childcare to taxes, we pay through the nose compared with most European countries. The analysis from the House of Commons Library has revealed that the UK has the highest poverty rate, right, of every country in Northwest Europe, with 11.7% of people living below the poverty line. We pump shit into our own waters. We impose sanctions, economic sanctions on ourselves. We sign trade deals that ruin our own industries. And then we go from Johnson to Truss. Mugs. Such mugs.
Totally mugs.
And not only do we make the country a complete pile of wank, we then strip off people's freedom of movement so that even if they do want to leave, we make it as difficult as possible for you to do so. I mean, it's literally like the politicians leading us are trying to make Britain a less fantastic place to live, isn't it? Talking of which, time for our weekly look at what Truss and Sunak are up to. Oh, it's just so dire. I'm almost wishing Sunak would get in now. Mm. He's the lesser of two evils, frankly.
Agreed.
In fact, in the interest of balance, folks, Here's a clip of him not being a complete prick for once during an interview with Julia Hartley Brewer.
Energy needs to be reliable, secure and affordable. Right now our energy supply isn't, I think we can all agree, any of those. And it can't be while the government's committed to net zero carbon emissions by 2050, I would suggest. Do you agree that net zero is an unremitting disaster for this country and will you abandon the policy?
No, I think that... I don't. I don't think that's right.
I mean, it's not a difficult question, is it? The question's weird. It's like, do you think we should try? Do you think we should stop trying to save the planet? No. I mean, yeah. So a vaguely mature answer there from Will from the Inbetweeners, as opposed to this cringeworthy. I mean, literally, my toes are curling already. This travesty from Truss.
President Macron, friend or foe?
The jury's out. But if I become Prime Minister, I'll judge him on deeds, not words.
It's actually malfunction.
I mean, thankfully, France don't have a leader with the emotional intelligence of a toddler. And he actually managed to respond to Truss's comments like a sentient human adult. He said, the British people... Britain is a friend of France, no matter its leaders, and sometimes despite its leaders. Meow. And then he did also say, if France and Britain cannot say whether they are friends or enemies, then we have serious problems. We do, Macron. We have serious problems.
We really do. The fact that the potential new prime minister cannot recognise that France, a mere few miles away, another democracy with shared Western values. We share NATO. It's like, they haven't done anything to us. Yeah, no, they're a friend. No, idiot. And also, at the hustings, why are they all acting like it's a game show? It's like you've tuned into an episode of Take Me Out. If you didn't speak the language and you were like, what are you listening to? So say it with me. It's like absolutely idiotic. So great tweet from Brendan May at B May. He said, I actually can't believe this is the calibre of person Tory members regard as fit and proper to run a G7 economy with a nuclear deterrent. Yeah, my kids are pretty freaked out too. Completely unthinkable. Until Brexit disaster. Under Thatcher, Major or Cameron, this would have been a sackable offence. And I think he's right, isn't he, Marina?
He is. And yet Labour, I've got to say, they're not being massively mature either. So this week we saw Labour MP for Manchester, Lucy Powell, and she posted on Twitter a photo of her wearing a T-shirt that she was wearing to Pride that said, never kissed a Tory. Which I just, it's sort of unnecessary. I might wear that around the house, but you know, I don't want our politicians wearing it. It's
a onesie for winter with like in nylon, so I'm really hot in my house and put that on. But yeah, no, I totally, totally agree. So like, it's all right if we're a bit immature in our personal lives, whatever. But if you were running to be prime minister or if you were a politician, I think bad move. It's just really divisive at a time when we've had so much division. We really need people to try and pull the country together a little bit. So saying I've never snogged a Tory is not the one.
No. I mean, and then, of course, she's lowered the bar. So Tory MP James Cleverly comes back in.
Oh, God.
Comments, keep asking nicely. I'm sure one will say yes eventually. And then she comes back again with, oh, James, I thought you'd never ask.
Oh, God. There's a time and a place, right? I think that politicians are allowed to display humour, but kind of not now because things are so serious in the country. So it just comes across as pathetic. Would you snog a Tory?
And we don't need more divisiveness. Let's just stop with this.
No. Did you hear what I said? I said,
what did you say, sorry?
Would you snog a Tory? I mean, you're married,
my husband wouldn't approve.
No. So let's go hypothetical.
I don't think I could find a Tory attractive. I think even, you know, when you, even the hottest guy I think if I found out he were a Tory, it would go from, he'd go from being like a 10 out of 10 to a 2 or a 3. It would, I just can't. Not a Tory in this day and age. Maybe once upon a time when they weren't all just crackpots. But now no.
Yeah.
You?
I'm going to say that back in the day when I was young and not really engaged, it just wasn't even at the forefront of my mind. Right now, it's a hard no from me, because I don't think the current administration are like conservative with a small c. So I think that if you, like on a dating app, for instance, people do put, the other thing I hate is apolitical, because then I'm like, well, you don't think anything. That irritates me.
I don't
swipe any Tories, no. Because if you're promoting that at the moment, you're saying you're all right with Rwanda. You're all right with cronyism. You're all right with corruption. And all of that. So it's a no from me. Oh, do you know what? I actually had a little bit of a tete-a-tete about this once with Ian Dale, because we were in a bit of showbiz course. We were in the green room once and he was saying how he's like good friends with Anne Widcombe and stuff. And I was like, well, she's got quite strong views about, you know, gay people and stuff, and Ian Dale is gay, out, you know, and he was like, yeah, but that's very...
Oh my God, Gemma, I didn't know that.
Did you not?
Didn't know that.
Which is very public about, but he was like, well, you're being a bit small-minded, because, you know, it's really good to have a broad church of friends and everything. And I was like, I said, yeah, okay, all right, you know, good, and I get that. And it is good to know people with different opinions. I'm not sure about homophobic people, quite frankly. I don't have any homophobic friends. But I said, but, you know, when it comes to going out with someone, I said, I personally right now, like I'd find it, I couldn't date a Brexiteer. And he was, because it was in the heart of all the stuff going on. And he was like, well, I think that's absolutely, says more about you. You know, it's pretty small-minded. It's a bit pathetic. And I was like, Ian, I bloody come into work to argue. I do not want to be doing it in my downtime. I just want to be with someone like-minded. So there you go. If that makes me a bad person, I'm a bad person.
You're not a bad person, Gemma. You're a lovely person.
Thank you, my dear. Thank you.
This week, we also saw a huge, huge bombshell on Twitter that was landed by Emily Maitlis. So she's now the ex-BBC broadcaster, who, by contrast, always seems to conduct herself with professionalism and integrity. And she gave a speech at the Edinburgh Festival, and let's just say, it sent Twitter into meltdown. Have a listen to this short clip. If you can, do try and listen to the whole thing, because it is very enlightening.
Here in the UK, we spent early summer watching the havoc at Dover Customs meet with a wall of silence around Brexit. Those who promise to get Brexit done can't mention it, because it clearly isn't.
Yeah, and ditto what Marina said. There was no point in us playing the whole clip here, but if you can go and find it, it's super interesting and very profound and... yeah, just a great speech. So Alex Taylor on Twitter said, no one has ever called out with such clarity and sheer authority the glaring omissions of UK broadcasters who refuse to discuss Brexit, the obvious economic cause of major change in this country, as Maitlis just has here in 1 minute. Absolutely this. Mm.
It was so good to hear, wasn't it? It was like vindication. Mm. And James O'Brien said, it's not hard to see why so many blithering idiots, client journalists and think tank shills are furious with Emily Maitlis's contention that ignorant wazooks shouldn't be afforded the same respect as proven experts by the BBC. Naturally, Ian Duncan Smith is among the angriest.
Oh, of course he is. It's quite interesting because in The Guardian, then there was this massive piece where Maitlis basically asserted that the BBC had an active agent of the Conservative Party shaping and dictating their editorial policy. So she didn't name the person in the piece, but the man who was in charge at the time when she was doing her Newsnight and everything was a guy called Robbie Gibb, who'd previously worked as Theresa May's Director of Communications. And so Gina Miller, who I'm sure you've all heard of, at that Gina Miller, described the piece as textbook on the road to an elective dictatorship. And, you know, it is fascinating. I mean, I'm sure, do you remember the Newsnight where she introduced the idea that the whole country were fed up, basically. I can't remember it verbatim, obviously, but that we could all see that Dominic Cummings had broken lockdown rules.
Yes.
And then she explains how she sort of basically went to bed that night, and in the morning it all sort of blown up, and that there was a lot of pressure from up above to take it off, and it disappeared from iPlayer, and it's all very sinister. And we could all see that he'd broken lockdown rules, you know. So
we're being gaslit by the BBC, Gemma. Who we met anyway. I mean, the whole speech, do try and listen to it. It's so interesting. It illustrates how this whole quest for impartiality, particularly at the BBC, is bonkers and also counterproductive. In fact, did you see the Twitter drama between Gary Lineker, who obviously works for the BBC on Match of the Day, and then BBC journalist Neil Henderson?
I saw a little bit of it. I don't know if you commented, but I think I saw a bit.
I didn't comment, actually, I don't think. But basically, Gary Lineker tweeted on the whole sewage thing, right? Fair enough. He tweeted, "As a politician, how could you ever, under any circumstances, bring yourself to vote for pumping sewage into our seas? Unfathomable." Then this BBC journo, Neil Henderson, pipes up, and they have a few tweets back and forth where Henderson quizzes Lineker on whether he has a different BBC contract to him, meaning he can tweet personal opinions, which of course Lineker does because he's in football, whereas Henderson is in news and current affairs. Then Henderson gets a bit more sassy and he responds, "Does not our duty of impartiality apply across the BBC?" And Lineker replies, "Only in news and current affairs. Surely you know this." And then Henderson finishes off the exchange with this well-aggy tweet saying, "The BBC lives or dies by its impartiality. If you can't abide it, get off it."
Wow. I mean, that's quite an exchange, isn't it?
Mental. I mean, all that Lineker's doing there is pointing out his incredulity at MPs voting to allow sewage into our waters. And this BBC journo tells him to quit his job, his football telly job, because he's not being impartial. Like, we have got to stop doing this. It is just, our discourse is being ruined because of this insane pursuit for what they call balance. I did tweet about this, right? So if something is objectively shit, and if it's also factually shit, then it's shit. If I then say it's shit, that's me being impartial. Me actually refusing to say it's shit and finding some lone secretly funded gob who says it's not shit, actually it's gold, that's not being impartial. That's actually being the very opposite.
Yeah, I'm going to take a punt here and say I bet that festival of Brexit was shit.
Objectively shit.
Just objectively, really shit. Sounds shit. Also, apparently, they wanted 66 million people. Something like 228,000 went, so it worked out £500 a head. That's the value of an arts festival, which is absolutely...
Fiscal prudence of the Tories there.
Wonderful spending of money, their expenditure. The other thing I will say quickly about the BBC, though, is where I worry is that... So I concur with what you're saying. I think the news... The problem is the news is a very difficult part of that whole thing, because to an extent they do have to be impartial in terms of, like, I understand why Jeremy Vine doesn't sit and give his opinions, okay, but where I worry is that the BBC make the best of, like, amazing wildlife, amazing dramas, films, incredible, they used to have incredible children's output as well, and it's all going to be lost because no one can get their shit together over the news output, which is such a small part of what the BBC do. And I agree there are massive, massive problems there, as being flagged up by Emily Maitlis and you know, with what you're saying. But yeah, and totally the idea that Gary Lineker is working in sport, can't have an opinion on sewage is just crazy. But then again, all that sport as well. And so what you've got is this, you know, a certain part of the political class trying to get rid of the whole thing. And it's a bit like the NHS. I think you'd miss it if it went. You really would.
Of course.
So, and it's envied by the rest of the world as well, like the NHS. It's like all these things that we do so well and they just want to get rid of it all. Anyway, Harry Cole, political editor of The Sun and ex-deputy editor of Mail on Sunday, and Carrie Simmons' ex-boyfriend as well. This guy is...
She knows how to pick them.
Oh, she picks some absolute corkers. He leapt in, and I tell you what, this wasn't very impartial. He said, funny how there were no posh telly crowd speeches decrying the fact that the entire BBC strategy was for many years set by a Gordon Brown era Labour cabinet minister who sat on this hallowed BBC board. Anyway, load of old waffle. David Yelland, who used to edit The Sun, came back and said, I edited your paper in that era, Harry, and don't recognise this as fact at all. The Maitland speech was entirely right. Brexit couldn't have happened without liars and charlatans being given the oxygen of unchallenged publicity, which leads so sweetly to this. I spotted this clip from US TV on my trawl. Have a listen.
Film that you have evidence of illegality of the Trump and Brexit campaigns, that they were conducted illegally. I was wondering if you can go into that. I mean, it was controversial even, and Carol Kalwalder, the great reporter at The Observer and The Guardian, was blasted and was personally targeted, very well demonstrated in The Great Hack, for saying that that Cambridge Analytica was involved in Brexit. They kept saying they had nothing to do with it until she shows a video of you, who work for Cambridge Analytica, at one of the founding events of Leave It or Brexit.
Yeah, leave.eu, that panel that I was on, which has now become quite an infamous video, was their launch event to launch the campaign. And Cambridge Analytica was in deep negotiations through introduction of Steve Bannon with both of the Brexit campaigns. I was told, actually, originally we pitched Remain, and the Remain side said that they did not need to spend money on expensive political consultants because they were going to win anyway.
And that, I mean, it, just the contrast between how they are speaking about it over across the pond and here, where it's almost like this sort of nobody, don't mention the war type thing. And then what struck me as well is obviously the horrible, sinister, clear illegality of that campaign in terms of how much money they had, etc. But so depressing, the complacency of Remain. And that was half the problem as well.
I know. Still stings, you know. So I'm just, I don't think I'm ever going to be over it.
No, it's like a scab and then you pick it and then you go, ooh, again, and feel really upset.
Speaking of Leave EU that was mentioned in that clip, Alexis Conran, who is currently actually presenting on Jeremy Vine, he tweeted saying, I've been seeing this doing the rounds recently and assumed it was a fake. Nope, he actually said it. And he's basically posted this image. It's a leave.eu ad. And it's a picture of Patrick Minford, who is apparently, it says on the ad, world-renowned economist. And the bold lettering says, we have actually done a simulation of leaving the EU, and the first thing that comes out is an 8% drop in the cost of living on day one. Now, that is really worth having. I mean, could you be more wrong, Patrick?
He's wrong.
And I hate to break it to your listeners, but that dude, right, that world-renowned economist, Patrick Bleeding Minford, is the same one that is currently advising Liz Truss on her economic plans.
We're totally doomed. Actually, do you know what? He had a look at her tax cuts that she was promoting that I think now... In terms of balance as well, going back to the Fuller Emily Maitland speech, I think they've found 3,856 million economists who say it's a shit idea, but Patrick Minford said it was a really good idea. So everybody else has said it will raise interest rates if you do that, and then inflation will go even up. So I think she is actually finally backpedaling about giving tax cuts to the wealthy as her fabulous plan to help us all cope with our energy bills.
Nice one, Liz.
Yeah.
But what I hate is, why do people, like, failures, these people who are failures, they keep failing upwards. You've got, like, Daniel Hannan, right, who's the ex-Brexit party, he's the ex-MEP, actually, and he still gets wheeled out as this Brexit expert. This is the guy who said, there is a clip of him, it's never going to go away, where he says, absolutely no one is talking about leaving the single market. Well, they talked about it and we left it. You've got Jacob Rees-Mogg, right, who's going to be in the next cabinet. He's wrong about everything. He said there was going to be cheaper food, cheaper wine, cheaper shoes. He doesn't even know what bloody century he's living in. And then Ian Duncan Smith, another one who's tipped to be in the next cabinet.
He's not, is he? He's not.
I think I dream that. Sorry, nightmare. He was basically lamenting the withdrawal agreement on Twitter, the one that he signed, right? And he was saying they being the EU, want our money and they want to stop us being a competitor. The withdrawal agreement we signed last year sadly helps them. So he's obviously saying the withdrawal agreement is, you know, we signed it. It's got these bits in it that, you know, are awful. Yet, listen to this clip. This was him just a few months earlier, cocksure as they come, standing up in Parliament to protest how they didn't need any more time to scrutinise the withdrawal agreement. Have a listen.
Right, and there's a reason, because we've had more than 100 hours in committee over the last 3.5 years. The reality is, if there is anything about this arrangement that we have not now debated, thrashed to death, I would love to know what it is. In a minute...
Bells. What a bow.
He sounds like he's just eaten like a whole saddle of beef and he's imbibed 10 bottles of port and his gout has spread to his brain. That's what I think.
Also, it's very articulate. 300 hours over 3 years, he said. Like, I haven't done the maths. Mm. That doesn't feel like a lot for something so massive.
No.
And finally, the Lord of failing upwards, David Frost. Lord David Frost, who fluffed the shit out of the withdrawal agreement. He called it excellent. Now we're ripping it up. He's saying it's no good. Harry Cole, back to Harry Cole, who's the guy at The Sun, called him a Brexit guru. So, listeners, what have you fluffed the shit out of recently? A souffle? Your driving test? Did you curdle your hollandaise sauce when you were making it? Some DIY? What? Worry not. Whatever it was. Because in the eyes of the Tory tosspots, you're a guru. Talking of corruption, we know Johnson has been on his vacations, not doing anything really, not able to help with the cost of living crisis. He's basically down tools and he's doing another cosplay tour pretending to be Maverick out of Top Gun. But actually, he hasn't quite downed tools. He did make time for something, and I tweeted about this and I was just, I despair. The government's first act since Johnson got back from holiday was not to address the cost of living crisis.
Of course not.
Nope.
No.
Nope. It was to draft a proposal to strip the Electoral Commission of its powers to launch its own criminal prosecutions for breaches of election law. Now, for people that don't know what the Electoral Commission is, it's basically the referee of our elections. They step in, they get involved, and they're independent, and the idea is that they can call out any, like, dodgy spending or, like, they, for example, they fined, I think it was Vote Leave, some piddly amount when they realised they'd broken the electoral rules. Now, what the government have done is they have brought the Electoral Commission, the referee, into its own power, and then this proposal they've just written basically means that, imagine this, it's basically saying to the referee, you can't issue a red card unless you've checked in with the team who you're giving it to, that they're okay for you to issue the red card.
Yeah, I mean, it's just massive. It's like, I've popped home for just a bit of corruption. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that it's been quite a week. It really, really has. They've been like really crazy front pages as well on the Mail, on the Express. And actually, when I was doing Sky Papers last weekend, I think the front of the Express was Nadine Dorries, and she'd interjected and said that the first thing that Truss should do if she becomes PM, the first thing, bearing in mind what's going on at the moment and the cost of living, etc., she should drop the inquiry into Johnson. Absolutely extraordinary. So this is the inquiry, and okay, it's linked to Partygate. So she's going, you know, it's old news, it's old hat, who cares, move on. I love him, basically. She's like, it's a proper, I want him, and I can't bear it. But it's more important than that. It's the inquiry that checks whether he knowingly lied in Parliament and whether he was sort of in contempt of all those constitutions, in which case that's really serious. And politicians have to be accountable. And Chris Bryant was even going to be leading this. Chris Bryant is Labour. And he actually recused himself and said, no, I won't, because he's very ethical. So he said, I shouldn't, because I've probably already made it clear that I think that Johnson did mislead Parliament. So he's backed off and everything. And then Dory's actually saying they just shouldn't bother at all. They just shouldn't. I mean, it is absolutely abhorrent, quite frankly. Dominic Minghella. He's a screenwriter and producer at D. Minghella. And he said, Dorries says, Truss should show how brave she is by cancelling the investigation into Johnson's conduct. That, of course, is the opposite of bravery. Real bravery, since the Tories no longer have a mandate, would be to call an immediate general election. Not just brave, but moral. So there you go.
Yeah, but they're not going to do
that. They're not going to do that, no.
What is it that Nadine Dorries loves so much about bravery?
I don't know.
It's his optimism? I mean, he's been coming back talking about, he did this cringe article in the Mail where he was talking about, was it Golden Age or something again? Some nonsense. But
rubbish.
He was urging us to keep a sense of hope and perspective in the tough months ahead.
Oh, more urging. And he loves that urging. We did that another episode.
Urge you.
And James Felton tweeted, a man who called £250,000 chicken feed and ate 27K of takeaway in a year, asking people on minimum wage, staring down the barrel of £5,000 gas bills and 15% inflation to keep perspective. And Dr. Dan Goyle, who I love, actually tweeted us at the Trawl to say that Sarah Murphy, who is, again, a brilliant campaigner on Twitter, and her reply should get a mention. So she wrote, it's obscene, troughing pigs raising their heads out of their feed just long enough to basically tell everyone to stop fussing.
I really like Sarah Murphy's tweets. She's got a massive following. She's just so angry. It's wonderful. And just really, like, tells it how it is.
Very eloquent with it.
Oh, yeah. No, she's great. She absolutely, that big following. Like, she hasn't got it for nothing. Oh, God, it gets worse. Old Johnson. He's having a glory tour, Marina, to just boast about all the wonderful things that he's done. Somebody called Happy Toast, at I Am Happy Toast, tweeted, on the plus side, he's done so little that each stop will be as fleeting as a water station at a marathon. I thought, it really is. And then somebody called Helen Kingston, I love this tweet, it's one of my faves, who's at Kingston writes, Boris Johnson is hooked on feeling important. He's going to keep trying the rest of his life. Can someone please just buy him a leaf blower? I mean, and I thought it was so apt, because leaf blower, it's like, if he was an appliance, he'd be a leaf blower, wouldn't he? Because it's sort of noisy, pointless.
That's far too much credit.
Bad for the environment. Really, but they just blow leaves around, you know, it's a bit lazy because you could just rake them. No?
You get satisfaction from a leaf blower.
Do you?
A little bit.
All right. I think that might be the first time we've disagreed, Marina. Make a little note of that. Okay, do you know what, though? Would he, if he's not a leaf blower, would he be a kettle? So he's been away. He's been away all summer. He's been lying in bed awake going, my subjects, my British electorate, my people, I am such a patriot. How can I stop them plunging into destitution? So we've been waiting for the Emperor to come back and give us his wisdom. Here it is.
If you have an old kettle that takes ages to boil, it may cost you £20 to replace it. But if you get a new one, you'll save £10 a year for every year on your £10 a year every year on your electricity bill.
I mean, do you remember when people used to say what a great speaker he was?
Freaking hell. What's going on?
I can't take it anymore. Having a freaking laugh. Like, my brothers and sisters were like, basically all on the WhatsApp group. Sean, our producer, he was tweeting me, WhatsApping me going, I've just had to Google, and like the cheapest kettle in the Amazon sale is something like £15.99. And basically worked out if you did, I don't know, I can't even remember now, 400 litres of water for 3 years, you'd save a fiver. I mean, I don't know, but it was just all an absolute freaking joke. And then my brother-in-law, Paddy, he sent me a forwarded from his physician friend. Physician? Oh, is he a physicist? Oh, like as in he's physics, yes. He said Boris Johnson's factually wrong as well. The amount of energy required to raise the temperature, I mean, this is a proper scientific thing, is fixed an amount. A more powerful kettle just transfers that energy quicker, but you still pay the same amount. Perhaps he means a better insulated kettle. Anyway, it goes on and on. And then he's just put, what a turnip that man is. I don't think there's been a more powerful vox pop recently than the one we're about to talk about. It's not specifically about energy bills, but it absolutely encapsulates, and this is serious, how monumentally far we've fallen as a nation. I think you've probably heard this already because it's gone beyond viral. It's a dinner lady who's dreading going back to work. She works in the sixth biggest economy in the world. So I don't think she should be feeling like this.
10 to 15 children a shift every day, every single day. And I'm saying, you can't have that. There's no money, you know. And it's breaking my heart. You know, you see them, they're in a queue full of all their peers and other school children. And it's humiliating for them. It's so humiliating. They just look at you like, well, what am I going to eat? And he's like, I can't give you anything. I'm sorry, you know. And I'm just dreading going back to work. I'm dreading October. And to be honest, it's getting to the point where I'm just like, I don't even think I can do this job anymore. I didn't take the job on to starve children. I'm sorry. It's just...
I didn't know there was a thing. I didn't know that happened. It was really shocking when I heard that.
I know. It makes me feel... And she talks about that anyway. I think probably everybody's heard it, but it's very powerful, isn't it? It's very powerful.
I can think back to school, and I can think back to being in the queue, and I can think back to, one, being starving come lunch, but two, like, anything like that where you would be shown up to be, I don't know, to not have something. I just can't imagine the impact physically and mentally that's happening to those kids.
In Britain.
It's just absolutely dire.
In Britain. Anyway.
And yet I just feel like this government, this inertia, I can't believe the lack of just nothing being done. And it's not just kids, by the way, but I feel like not enough people are talking about the fact that commercial things like commercial buildings, hospitals, care homes,
schools,
small businesses, pubs, no one is going to be able to afford these spiraling bills because those businesses, commercial businesses, aren't protected by a price cap the way households are.
I know.
No one's talking about it.
An NHS NHS manager was on the radio the other day saying that they are preparing rooms in the hospital that their staff can go and sit in because they won't necessarily be able to go home because it'll be too cold.
Oh, fastest growing economy in the G7, Gemma.
Yeah, right.
And Nadeem Zahawi, in fact, was actually giving out advice. He was saying how advice on keeping warm and keeping our energy bills. And he said the reality is that we should all look at our energy consumption. It is a difficult time.
Yeah, well done, Einstein. Could have told you that months ago. I mean, honestly, like, well done, Sherlock. I got a little jab in on him on Sky News, actually, because, yeah, I mentioned and brought up the fact that he tried to claim at 1.5 grand to heat his stables. So another man of the people there.
Yes. Yeah. Great. And then Kate Hoey, wherever she is. Pro-Brexit. She is shamefully, she's a Labour MP, pro-Brexit and all around just one cuckoo's nest. Crazy person. And she tweeted in response to Sahawi's suggestion that we look at our energy consumption. She said, of course we should. Those of us brought up before central heating wore extra jumpers when winter came. To which my favourite reply was from @SimonHarris_MBD, who said, let me explain how jumpers work. They don't generate heat. They keep heat in. So if you're broke and can't afford to eat properly to fuel your body, they would be as much use as a gum shield on Shane McGowan. You still freeze to death, but at least you'll be all fluffy. And another great one, there were so many, came from @Noel_Sargent, who said, great advice for pensioners who otherwise would have been wandering around with just their pants on, not sure that an extra jumper is going to heat their water or cook their food. And then the most incisive response, I thought, was this one from @EdMorrish. And he said, Fine, I'll put on an extra jumper like you did in the 60s if you give my kids free university and job seekers allowance like you had in the 80s.
Yeah, blooming good point. And at Jonathan Coe, the writer, tweeted, back in the 50s, we managed without central heating. In our house, there was ice on the windows, condensation on the walls. My gran died of hypothermia and I turned into a bitter old man who thinks Liz Truss would make a great prime minister.
Nicely done, Jonathan.
Very
Funny
good.
Enough, all those hardships that people had back then, they don't always work out well for people.
No.
Jenny Godfrey wrote, I grew up in the 70s. I wore hand-me-down clothes and our house was so cold you could see your own breath. We ate whatever was cheap, which made for some unusual combinations. Corned beef and cabbage, anyone? And you know what? It was shit, and it did me harm, and it was 50 years ago.
And I bet she had terrible flatulence as well. Corned beef and cabbage, terrible combo.
I actually really like corned beef. It's a pregnancy craving I've got. I love it.
Oh, I'll get you a tin. And a leaf blower. That's Christmas sorted and birthday. with a big bow on it. Sean Harries on Twitter said, my granddad used to tell me that he had no central heating growing up, so him and the refugee lad who shared his bed used to wet themselves to keep warm. Sounds brilliant. And then Carl Thomas, the last one, but they're all so good. Carl Tomlinson on Twitter said, here's a point. These massive pricks like Kate Hoey talking about growing up without heating and just bunging a jumper on, were they paying 400 shitters a month for fuel at that time?
These tweets, these people who write these tweets, this is why I love Twitter so much.
There
is so much sass, but also anger, and it's rightfully directed at these just, well, wrong-uns in power.
Mm.
As for sass and anger, have a listen to this incredible clip that did the Twitter rounds this week, right? So Steve Barclay, who is our current health secretary, I didn't know, they've changed so often.
So many times.
He's outside a hospital doing an interview. This woman, this ledge, she clocks him, she approaches him, and boy, does she give it to him.
That plan for jobs has protected
many
businesses.
Are you going to do anything about the ambulances waiting and the people dying out? Well, don't you think 12 years is long enough?
Yes, and we are.
12 years? You've done bugger all about it. People have died and all you've done is nothing.
I love her.
Oh, and a nation
love
cheered.
Her.
And do you know what I loved about her as well? It looked like Miriam Margulies's sister
she
or
did,
something.
Did,
she was
yeah.
like brilliant.
Yeah. She was so little in the clip, wasn't she? And she's like looking up at this man all suited and booted. And I love it. I love her bravery. And I just wish more people could be like that.
Yeah, I know, because it probably was quite intimidating. She was fab.
Of course.
We love you. We like these people on the beach as well. At this point, I'm just like into anybody shouting at Tories. So so basically, this is SOS Whitstable on Twitter. So beautiful seaside resort. And they interjected with an MP who's at Sallyanne1066, who basically was wanging
a Tory,
on.
Tory,
she's
MP.
A Tory. I'm not explaining this very well. Tory MP. And they say, you don't know what you voted for. There was absolutely zero mention of banning sewage overnight. It was progressive reductions that you rejected. Another Conservative MP peddling the party lie. Just listen to the crowd around this lady.
We just wanted to ask, because you voted last year, didn't you, against companies changing their policy towards this. So why are you here today?
I am here today to support people of Hastings and Rye and their stance about fighting for better water quality and for the reduction of sewage discharges into our waterways. That's exactly what I have voted in government legislation to reduce the discharges coming out.
But last year you voted against it, didn't you?
Oh, there you go, bit of old jeering. I tell you what, Marina, the revolution, it's a-coming. So none of the situation is particularly ideal, but these terrible situations are made worse by having terrible people in charge at a terrible time. I did a tweet this week that got loads of likes, like thousands. And all I wrote was, Johnson set the bar really, really low. I have a horrible feeling Truss is about to limbo underneath it. And quite a few people... Did you like that one? I just wanted a little pat on the back for that. But, you know, the thing is, then what you do, you get quite a lot of... people who are like, oh, but, you know, you've moaned about Johnson for years and now you're just going to moan about the next person. And it's like, well, yeah, until we get someone with decent. And in fact, your mate Dan Hodges, I think, could be up for...
Oh, my best
mate. Your best friend, your lovely mate. He is one of those kind of
people.
He's
at the Mail on Sunday, by the way, for our listeners who don't know. He's one of the journalists at the Mail on Sunday.
Yeah, who Marina really had a massive showdown with on Byline TV and told him off and he just sat there going... Anyway, he tweeted, if people genuinely think Liz Truss will be a worse PM than Boris, then presumably they should think of the national interest and use their platforms to join the Boris Must Stay lobby. Dan, no, that's not what we're going to do. I'm as likely to do that as I am to go to the Festival of Brexit. It's not going to happen. So Russ, our mate Russ from Cheshire, said, you heard it, lefties. The only options in the Daily Mail's version of democracy are smooth-brained cheese fetishist Liz Truss or Boris Johnson, a dissolute, inebriated yeti who punches the air because he thinks it's poorer than him.
I hate this binary bollocks. Do you know, I feel so out of control as well. I feel like we just don't have any control over this, who this next PM is, right? Mm. Why? Because 97.7% of us, of the electorate, will get zero say in who the next PM is. It's all down to oddballs like this in the Tory party. Have a listen.
I'm a Margaret Thatcher fan, God rest her soul.
I'm here to attend a hustings and I want to hear what Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak have to say.
How long have you been a member?
Since I was 18 and I'm 68. 50 years.
One will say about Truss with Boris and his lies. You know what, politicians lie, never answer the questions anyway. Everybody knows that.
I'm a Brexiteer, so that was one of the big things. And actually, I think I would prefer Boris Johnson to stay.
What was your favourite? What was the best moment of Boris Johnson's prime ministership, do you think?
Getting us out of Europe. Getting us out of EU.
Believe it or not, we've come here because we've got a wedding tomorrow.
Crikey, listeners, does that reassure you? Do you feel like you're in safe hands? Because I feel about as safe as if I were getting into a car with a driver who was completely off his tits.
Oh, Marina, do you know what made me really happy this week? Was that a few people on Twitter have caught on to Lord of the Week, the Dark Lords. Because before we did this podcast, I hadn't really thought about all these mad lords. And then this week there was like Lord Alan Sugar being a bit mad. And we've done, not done, but you know, we've done Lord Zach Goldsmith in the past. We've done Lord Moillon, Lord David Frost, who tweeted this. He said, the existence of David Frost is the single most persuasive argument for abolishing the House of Lords. But then, even more exciting, you came up with an actual Lord of the Week for us. I was so excited when I saw it on Twitter.
Yeah, so this guy is called Lord Cruddus. what do they call it? Nominative determinism, when your name explains a bit about who you are.
Like my name means loud. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Strong.
So Lord Cruddus, right? So just let's give the listeners a bit of background on Cruddus if they don't know. Cruddus is a billionaire banker, Tory donor.
She said banker.
Who admitted, according to the Times, that he hoped Johnson would give him a peerage after he gave £4 million to the Tory party. And of that £4 million, 500,000 of it was deposited just 3 days after taking his seat up in the upper chamber of the House of Lords last February. And this is the thing that's nuts about this is actually Johnson appointed him, it gave him his peerage, despite advice from the Lord Lord's Appointment Commission that told him not to because of his past dodginess. And Johnson just decided he would anyway. Mm. Anyway, Lord Crudder, so you've got a bit of background on him now, he tweeted, "Lefties are in meltdown today. They must be worried about Boris' return. Looks like we are getting to them. Angry cat emoji, laughing face emoji." And I had to check because he's not got a blue tick. And I had to check. I was like, no, this can't. This cannot. No. Sure, it bloody is him. And I just think it's unreal that this is the standard of person we have in positions of utmost power and privilege in this country.
But on the upside, we've got a Lord of the Week. And he's called Lord Crudus. I mean, what the flipping actual. If I was suddenly a mad dictator that was put in charge of the UK, God help us all, I would just ban lords. I would. In fact, no, what I'd do, I'd change the law. So instead of fox hunting, we did lord hunting. That's what we'd do. So we'd get sort of foxes and humans on the back of horses and you could chase lords. That'd be fine. I think that'd be cool. Yeah, so they could see how it felt. And they'd scuttle around trying to escape. It's probably not going to. No. Hey, it's already underrated tweet of the week time. Unbelievable. And yay. I have got a couple that I love. A lady called Jen at Jenny Flower. Oh, God, it's more singing. I'm so sorry. But she wrote it. It's not my fault. She wrote, "I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad," says Nadeem Sahawi. "You just need to be more resilient."
Jenny Flower is brilliant.
We like that one, Jenny. Thank you. And then Brendan May, who's featured again today, at B May. So Dan Wootton is on GB News. Dan Wootton also used to work, I think, for The Sun. Dan Wootton and I argued a lot once on a show. Anyway, I've declined to be on his show. He tweeted, "We are facing an energy catastrophe because we let the middle class, lefty, Ramona lunatics enact their virtue signalling plans." And Brendan just quote tweeted it and put, "House."
So he could didn't get any it? More bold terms like in there. What a douche. Look, we have, I feel like we keep overrunning, don't we? We keep going longer and longer each
can't
week.
Can't help it.
I think we need to
stop talking
the podcast there.
Sorry. Okay, yeah, we douche.
You know what we say here. Please, if you love it, tell us. If you don't like it, tell us.
Don't
in a nice
tell
way.
Us. No, don't tell us.
Share it with people you think might like it. People who need radicalising.
Yes, send it to Daily Mail readers.
Actually, no, one of my sister's friends, Becky, if you're listening, hello, she messaged my sister and said, "I love the podcast. I think I might vote Labour."
Oh,
that is a huge win.
Bloody good
huge
work,
win.
Mate. Good work.
Well, we've got pudding for our listeners, like we always do. And this week's pudding came about because, so Gemma and I obviously WhatsApp quite a bit. And by WhatsApp, I mean, you know, slag off the Tories around the clock. And she sent me this fab poem that Daddy Forte, so her dad, had written. And I thought, that's so lovely and also perfect for the troll.
Yeah, so this was Marina's idea. And then she was like, Sean as well, our producer, he was like, "Why don't you stick it on Twitter?" And I was like, "Do I want to expose my dad?" Like, not expose my dad, that sounds weird. But do I want to... That would be really controversial. That'd be the sort of thing Boris Johnson would do. No, do I want to, like, put his creativity on Twitter? Because people can be... And I just thought, well, let's just test the waters. I put this poem up. It got thousands of likes. So many people were so nice about it. Three people said he should be the poet laureate. I was like screen grabbing the praise and sending it to him and he was dead chuffed. I mean, he's a very creative geezer and he's a bit of a ledge. So, but I also was laughing because last week I was slagging off Rachel Johnson for talking to her dad on LBC and talking about her brother. And now like I've just gone full blown. Get the family on the podcast. So
nepotism, the game the whole family can play.
Exactly. It's good enough for the Tories, good enough for me. Yeah.
Exactly.
So go on then, Marina. Do you want to introduce
go
it?
Go on then.
So that
come
I don't
on,
feel
Michael
so
Forte.
Yeah, I don't feel so like the nepotism thing.
Mm. Okay, so this is this week's pudding from the one, the only, Michael Forte.
4 steps to hell. Step one, Cameron. As smooth as a plastic banknote, a cipher in a suit, a bottomless pit of nothingness, he started the dispute with our European neighbours to appease the rabid right. He proposed a referendum that has turned our world to shite. Step two, May. Strangely forward-leaning, but only in her walk, she preached the Brexit gospel and talked the Tory talk. A fervent believer in Brexit, though she'd campaigned to remain, she spread the Brexit mantra while sounding quite insane. No deal is better than a bad deal, she honked like an angry goose. But she didn't get her deal through, and the bastards cut her loose. Step three, Johnson. People like this funny chap, this rumpled, clubbable Tory, but his days as a Bullingdon hoodlum tell quite a different story. A greedy, lying narcissist feathering his nest, milking Tory donors was the one thing he did best. His horrendous Brexit deal went through, making millions for his chums, whilst leaving others destitute, millions of credulous bums. Levelling up was a great success, though not everyone got more. While millionaires became billionaires, it was levelling down for the poor. As food banks fed the destitute, the ruling class got richer. He'd done horrendous damage by the time he left the picture. And now Truss. Truss, a surgical appliance, only this one inflicts pain. The ultimate horror Tory, borderline insane. The red meat of racist rhetoric, hooking codgers in the shires, pandering to xenophobes and stoking their desires. Spouting shit more freely than the shit flowing into the sea, picking fights with global leaders, completely out of her tree. Pig-headed and thick as mince, a fatal combination. What Cameron did to a pig's head, she'll now do to the nation.